a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
On the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We are live here inside the MDN studio. Speaking of the MDN, for all of your Michigan apparel and merchandise needs, make sure to visit the MDN, the superstore at 303 South State Street. Of course, any of your local MDN locations or online at MDN.com. All of your Nike and Jordan brand Michigan apparel can be purchased, should be purchased at the MDN. Of course, you want to step it up a notch and take it to another level, your Michigan fashion, you can head on over to the Victor's Collection. Brooks Brothers, Cutter and Buck, you know, your Nike golf. They step it up a notch, Mr. Weintraub.
They do step it up a notch there. The polo gear there as well is actually just in this. They have the shoes are on that side, the Jumpman shoes and the Nike shoes and some other shoes as well. And Sam, also a reminder to mark your calendars for game day, Saturday, October 7th, at the corner of Stadium in Maine where the MDN tent is. We are actually sliding our spot over one little property, so barely moving. But we're sliding over to open up space for a bus, Sam, to park in our normal spot. And what is that bus going to be?
Victoria's Secrets Ladies.
A Victoria's Secret bus with Victoria's Secret Ladies.
Ladies.
So, ladies, exactly. And then we will have, we have been told that there will be some
Ryan
ladies.
Ryan Cook wants to come to that one. Yeah.
We have a few ladies in the tent that day. So,
That's not true.
Ryan's going to finally cash in and say, I'm ready to come.
My lovely wife may be listening. She doesn't.
Hey, man, there's nothing wrong with window shopping.
Show.
Take it from veteran married guy. You can window shop.
And so we'll mark your calendar for that for game day. And, of course, the Victoria's Secret Collection at the MDN Superstore, the MDN and the Victor's Collection, the official outfitters of Sports Talk 1050 WTK.
Nothing better than marriage advice from Sam.
And no, we are not taking.
I've used that on my wife. It doesn't work. It doesn't work on Sam's wife either.
It doesn't work for everyone. Look, it does work for me.
I saw you do it.
It works for me in spot. You got to know when to
remember,
use it.
There was the one at the IM building, and your wife was there, and you used it, and it didn't work at all.
It just didn't work on that occasion.
It didn't work at all.
There was an audience, and so we had to go home and get squared away, and then I used it again, and everything worked out. 9:07 on a Thursday morning,
and that whatever that is not as bad as it sounded.
All right, so guys, so much to jump into. Let's jump right into the game really quickly. Purdue was never going to win that game. They were never going to win that game.
Well, I mean, they might have won that game.
They were never going to win that game.
I mean, not when.
Well, take the first half.
Not as soon as Michigan went up 14-10.
They were never going to win that game.
That game was over as soon as Michigan takes the lead, but they had 7 points at halftime.
Dude, that game was always about Michigan's offense finding its footing.
Yeah.
Which it was always going to have time to do because Purdue had not faced a defense nearly as fierce, as physical, as talented as this one. And the stats said as much heading into that game. Now, did I expect for Michigan to, you know, hold them 0 for 12 on third down conversions and completely blow up any semblance of what they wanted to do in the second half? No, I thought Purdue would have a little more success, but I was not at all surprised that they stymied that attack in ways in which the Tom Dinerts of the world didn't see coming.
Well, two things. We've already talked about Bush a lot. We've already talked about Chase Winovich a lot. We've already talked about Hurst a lot for like years. The two things that kind of jumped out in this game is that Noah Furbush is doing really good work as a decoy blitzer.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows what his job is.
I call him the fullback leading for Devin Bush.
Yeah, exactly. His job is not to get to the quarterback. His job is to occupy two offensive linemen and let Devin Bush go and do his thing.
Like you would have a defensive lineman do. If you had a fourth down lineman, a lot of times that guy's job is to occupy a couple of blockers.
And so he does that by blitzing, and what he does is he feints into the gap that Bush is going to go into, and then he gets that guard's attention. He's like, oh, I got to block this guy. And then he goes back inside. So he's already got the attention of the guard, and now the center is like, okay, I got to block this guy. And he's done that really consistently for four games. And that's why Devin Bush is shooting into the backfield untouched so often. It's because it's Noah Furbush getting the job done.
Well, you know, as long as we're talking about guys we haven't talked about, I thought Rashawn Gary has also improved his game a lot, in especially on his pass rush. He's leveling out a lot better. In the early on, he was coming too far upfield, leaving a gap. Yeah. And if you look at the tape in this game, he levels off really well and squeezes the pocket down, which made it difficult for the Purdue quarterbacks to scramble out of the pocket, and they ended up coming right into the traffic as opposed to away to it. So even though Gary may not be getting a sack on the play, puts enough pressure on the outside to squeeze the pocket and then levels so that the quarterback has really nowhere to go. And that's been a difference, too, I think, in terms of our pass rush.
Yeah, and then the other two guys who we hadn't really seen a whole lot of for circumstance more than anything are Lavert Hill and David Long.
Mm-hmm.
Both of whom we got tested repeatedly in this game, and both of whom passed every test. You know, Long had the one completion on him, but he got his hand on that ball and just happened to like deflect back to the receiver for a back shoulder throw. And I'm like, that's fine, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other two times he's tested, he's dominating the route. And you know, Jordan was so angry about it, and Preet's like, "What are you doing? You're stupid. I hate you." And now
he didn't say that.
I'm paraphrasing. But, yeah, they've played great so far, both in run support and against the pass. So, Brandon Watson, too. The only difference with Watson is we've seen him do that already this season. Mm-hmm. So far, so good for the cornerbacks.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue, you know, had a pretty good first half, 5.6 yards per play. But a lot of that was misdirection. You know, some pretty good play calling, and give them credit for that. But, I don't know, they probably had, what, .1 yard per play in the second half. I mean, they did essentially nothing against that defense. I think Don Brown figured it out, and, well, the players figured it out too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they figured out a way to snuff out some of those screens. You saw Devin Bush just blow one up.
Man. Well, that was Don Brown. He's just like, okay, Bush, you go do this. And then he did it. Like,
right. And the other thing about Devin Bush, I actually tweeted this out. You know, I'm worried about him getting thrown out of the game for targeting. But I actually think this Michigan team in general is pretty good about not like trying to get that extra hit or pushing guys out of bounds after, like, they're aggressive, but they kind of know when to stop. That's something I came away from this game.
You saw something in this game that made you concerned about Devin Bush in turn?
No. Okay. Well, I mean, it's more the comment. It's like, oh, this is after the Florida,
oh, gotcha,
the penalty. Oh, well, that's just the way they play. I play, and they kick me out. I was like, oh, geez. But no, I mean, I think these guys have been coached up pretty well too. Yeah, I mean, you haven't seen, like, a late hit penalty or something. Like, I mean, some of the dumb Purdue ones on Purdue's defense were just...
Yeah.
And Michigan doesn't do that, and they don't do that on special teams.
And Jalen Robinson was taking out a little frustration. A little frustration for not being able to follow in his brother's footsteps in the maize and blue. Got a little late hit there. But, I mean, the one obviously, that, as we talk about a little bit about targeting for a moment, that's even if it's not called on the field, you can get it on review, right?
Yeah.
And so, what the hell?
The one on state. Yeah, that one is impossible to figure out. I can't understand why. First of all, it was obvious live. And secondly, on replay, why is anyone paying attention? I don't understand it.
I mean, I don't want to disagree with Harbaugh, but I didn't feel it was egregious.
You didn't?
No.
I thought it was awful.
Like, I felt...
Wait, the play you got hurt on, right?
Yeah. I felt it was about as late as Cannell hitting the receiver.
Well, even if you don't...
And then, like...
Even if you think the hit was within the proper amount of time, he led with his head.
He's laying on the ground.
I thought he like fell over more than like lunged at a guy. I don't know. Like, that one didn't like leap out to me as like a horrible
thing. I mean, you're talking about the guy that kind of jumped on him afterwards?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got to agree with Brian here on that one.
I mean, it was... I don't know.
I think the problem with that hit was that he kind of landed on him and like kind of tweaked his spine back, right? I mean, isn't that the problem with Spate now?
It didn't seem like what he was trying to do. It just seemed like he couldn't stop. I don't know. Maybe I'm.
This gets to one. First of all, I guess I didn't see it the same way. But let's concede the argument that it was not intentional. Does that matter?
I don't know.
Does intent matter targeting?
Who knows?
I don't know.
I mean, if you ask Joe Bolden would say no, right? Like, he'd be like, no, it does not matter. It doesn't matter if you tried to or if you got blocked into it or anything. I mean, there was in the Notre Dame-Michigan State game, late in that game, they almost got Lewerke's knee exploded because the Notre Dame defensive end was, like, thrown into his knee. And he got flagged for that, and he was like, dude, Chewin's like threw me into this dude. So I don't know. Intent probably doesn't matter. So it probably maybe should have been another targeting ejection. But I mean, Michigan did get a couple of breaks in this game. Like there was a holding call against Crawford's defender that was terrible. Like probably the worst defensive holding call I've ever seen. And then they probably should have gotten a roughing penalty instead of a running into the kicker penalty on the punt, because they did get the guy's plant leg. So I think of all the like the referee outrage games of the year, this one was probably the one most in Michigan's favor, because they got a couple of big breaks.
They definitely not that it mattered. I think part of it was the impact on Wilton, and then we'll get to, you know, the aftermath of his injury coming up a little bit later when you talk about it. I mean, they said we get X-ray from when you don't have a brace, and yeah, you know, some of the Purdue statement, which is like, come on, dude. I mean, it was a misrepresentation of facts in my educated opinion. But we'll get to that a little bit later. Let's go to the offensive side where, you know, John O'Korn, man, John O'Korn steps in, you know, really good first drive, obviously Michigan scores, but then there's like, you know, three or four, I can't remember where, and Brian, I know you are on Twitter as the game, you too, Ed, as the game is going on, and there were a lot of fans that were up in arms saying, oh, well, we just don't have a quarterback. We can't develop a quarterback. This guy looks like Spate. And then O'Korn finds his way. He finds his rhythm. He starts his improvisational skill starts to show, and he looks like a guy that has gone far beyond the game manager that he was in last year's Indiana game and was a playmaker in this game.
I wouldn't say he was a game manager in the Indiana game.
What would you call him?
Bad.
I mean, I think it's called a euphemism, Brian. Manager is a term that you use to describe someone that you don't want to call a good quarterback.
I understand that, but that's abuse of the language right there.
He was a caretaker for the offense in that game. They won, right?
He was.
He made a couple runs in that game that were very important towards the end.
He did.
Right.
But
in this game, he was a playmaker with his legs and his arm.
I don't want to understate how the radical transformation that we saw in this game. And actually, on my Twitter, people were more upset about the offensive line the whole way through, and people weren't really
rightfully so
banging on O'Korn. There was the one kind of overthrow on the Grant Perry route on like third and short where he went long, which is a cool play. And that was just kind of like a little bit of grumble there.
That's the only throw he missed, I thought.
Well, he also, I mean, he was inside and
on the interception.
But that's like he made relatively few errors, and he didn't make any severe ones. Like 9 out of 10 times that interception hits the ground, right?
Right.
Like that's not going to be a pick. So he found people, and he was making good, like, I think, pre-snap decisions. So a lot of the McCune stuff was, you know, Purdue looks like they're going to blitz. They look like they're in zone. I know I have this, and I'm just going to confidently go there. I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And I don't know why, but we haven't really seen that very much with Spate this year.
You know, is there something better about the Fox feed and that you can see the defensive backs a little better than you can on Big Ten?
The Purdue, I think, box, like whatever their camera setup is, it's farther away from the field.
Maybe that's it.
And their director was terrific. This is my favorite, like, UFR in a long time, just from replays perspective. I get a big view of the field. I was very happy with my first like Fox director experience, and that's like Michigan Purdue.
So. I imagine as long as Tim Brando isn't on the call, I'll be good.
Well, I mean, you can actually.
The worst thing about Tim Brando is that I read his tweets in his voice. Yeah. It's terrible. Yeah.
The thing I liked was you can see a lot of the wide receiver play in the game, and you usually can't, or it's harder on TV.
Yeah,
and what I noticed, again, was Wilton not seeing guys, even in his line of sight, that were open early on. And O'Korn was finding the open guy pretty quickly. And I don't know if that's a pre-snap read or it's as the play unfolds, he's seeing what's in front of him better. But that was a huge difference.
Are you thinking about like the third down where he had McCune open? A little bit of a mitigating factor there is that was supposed to be a rub route for Hill, and Shanley just missed the guy. So he's like setting up to be like pretend he's gonna get a throw, and he sets up like a yard two, and he doesn't stick his butt out, and the guy just runs by him. So that's like, okay, I gotta come off this and get to my second read. Spate should be able to do that at this point in his career. He does not. And O'Korn didn't have to do that very much. O'Korn was like, okay, this guy's probably going to be open based on a pre-snap read, which is important to do, and then he was. So I think that's kind of still an open question for him, but there's no question that the offense felt like it was moving a lot better.
Well, one of the things I noticed, I felt like in that series of series where the offense was a bit stagnant, you said people were bagging on the offensive line, it felt like he started to feel the pressure. And you could see, I mean, there was one play where he takes his head from downfield and he's looking around and the pressure isn't there yet. It's coming, but it's not there yet. And you kind of see it was getting to him as you got deeper in the game. He started to, feel that pressure better, keep his head down the football field and extend plays. And whether it was, running a little bit or at least extending the play long enough to make that throw and that big throw to Grant Perry. I mean, that was just,
where he broke the contain around the goal line.
Yeah.
That was an amazing play. And after that, I felt like he had his confidence and feet under him. And that was maybe the big play in the game. Really.
I mean, he had three of those too. Like he had one more to Perry and he had one to People Jones. And, to do that once in a game is pretty good. To do that three times in a game is...
And particularly the one to Perry, because, I mean, on second and six, I think Gentry just drops a ball for a first down. So to come back after that, make that play...
I remember being over in Rome and watching the guys, because we got to go to practice every day in Rome, and watching them there. And I wrote this at the time, said it on the radio. I said, look, we're focusing a lot on Brandon Peters, and understandably so. He looked good in the spring game. Talent is he's the number one talent in the quarterback room. But John O'Korn has really improved. I mean, don't discount him. He's playing well. And I think it was overlooked even in the spring how much progress he made. In the fall, it really was the case that he had closed the gap. What Wilton bought was through his experience and his performance was, he was the guy, but the leash or the gap was a lot narrower. So I didn't get the feeling at all that they were like, oh, man, if we got to put John O'Korn in this game, we're in trouble. I think last year, maybe some of that nervousness in the aftermath of the Indiana game might have been there, but certainly not. After what he did in the spring and fall. And on tomorrow's Inside Schembechler Hall, JT Rogan talks about that a lot, about, John is one of the guys he knows the best on the team, and talking to him over the course of the last 6 months, some of the changes that have taken place mentally that have translated to performance on the football field, at least so far. We got to see how it manifests the rest of the way, right? But so far, so good.
But honestly, there's not much bad you can say about O'Korn since the spring game. I mean, he's looked good in just about every snap he's taken. I mean, except for maybe that Perry throw. And I wasn't a big fan of his when he transferred in here. And there's really nothing bad to say since the spring game.
Yeah. So in Michigan, they win that game 28-10. I mean, there are a number of things. Michigan emphasized the tight end more in this game. That was good to see.
They did. There seems to be. I mean, we'll see what happens when Wheatley gets healthy. But there seems to be a clear pecking order with McCune and Gentry at the top now. So that was a bit of an open question. We saw a lot of Grant Perry playing on the outside. Mm-hmm. We saw some Nate Shanley. He got two important catches. First one, a pretty slick route, pitch and catch for O'Korn's first completion.
And, I was getting questions about the Shanley thing, and I talked to Joe Hastings about that. He's the coach that we talked to. GA was with defensive line, but he is a wide receiver by trade. That's the position that he played. The position that he is now assisting with and coaching with. He said, man, Nate Shanley doesn't make mistakes. Said he, you throw him out there, every route is run the proper depth. He doesn't drop balls. He blocks. I guess he might not stick out his butt on rub routes, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, he'll work on that, I imagine.
And when you compare that with some of the young guys, as we talk, and we talk about Donovan Peoples-Jones, the athletic talent is unreal, and you kind of see them putting more on his plate. And I think that was going to be the case whether Tariq was there or not. But he comes from, and these are my words, he comes from a high school offense like a lot of kids, where you're running three routes.
Yeah.
You're running slants, you're running goes, you're running bubbles. You don't have sophisticated route trees and have to have, you know, all these release moves refined like you do in this offense. And so that is a transition process. A transition process that initially Tariq Black was more refined in coming in. Donovan getting there more and more by the week to the point where he's looking at me like, Coach, why am I not in the game? And so he said, we're putting him in the game a lot more. And he's producing.
One thing on Wheatley, I think he did play some in this game.
He did.
And he made a phenomenal block on the last touchdown. In fact, I think he ended up blocking two guys.
Well, one of those guys
sort of ran himself out of the play, yeah. I know. But it was still a nice block by Wheatley, and he ended up blocking two guys, which was key to that last touchdown.
It was, and like Michigan has been running mesh from that. So the first touchdown of Gentry was a mesh route. And the way Wheatley came off the line and went and looked for a linebacker, it looks just like a mesh route. So it's second and like 7 or second and 9 or something. So it's a very like mesh kind of down. And the guy who's assigned to him in man coverage just never gets the idea that he's blocking until it's way too late. So he gets basically a free 2-for-1. And that's, you know, a very subtle thing that Michigan was doing that opened up that last touchdown.
All right, we got to get to a break. When we come back on the other side, we'll talk a little bit about locker room conditions. Certainly want to get you guys' take on just earth-shattering news, it seems, in
National
college basketball.
National Champs 2013.
I mean, that's the same thing. Give me my
hang a banner.
My damn championship, man.
If you have a banner stripped twice, can they actually award it to the team you beat?
I do feel cheated, man. We'll get to your phone calls as well on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. All right, so, guys, before we get to the phones, a word or two about O-line play, just blocking in general when you include the backs in the equation versus Purdue.
I think this was a pretty alarming game. Like, there were a lot of guys shooting through basically untouched, both in the pass and the run game. It's four games in. I was hopeful that they would start getting some things fixed, and it doesn't seem like it's going that direction. So, my expectations for this line is it would be on par with last year, if not a little bit better, and I'm kind of downgrading from that. I think that they're going to be an issue going forward.
Yeah, and it's not just the physical aspect, right? I feel like the blitz pickups have not been good. I think they struggled with that in Air Force as well, and that wasn't particularly good in this game. Aluzio had a pretty much terrible game.
In pass protection, I think he was okay in the run, but yeah, he was not great in pass.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, they had about 4.2 yards per carry. That's including the long one that Evans had at the end, and that's not good. I think that says even more about what Orcorn was able to do.
That's like
that offense, but he didn't really have.
That's adjusted for like sacks and stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Ryan. I'm clarifying for our audience.
Thank you, Brian.
And so 5.1 is the NCAA average, and Purdue last year was like 123rd in rush defense in various fancy metrics.
And thanks for bringing that up, Brian. Like, yeah, overall defense, this defense was 116th by my metrics last year. Like, we're not talking about like Ohio State level talent here. That's probably the most alarming thing about what we saw on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the alarming thing to me was that I thought there were as many or more breaks on the left side of the line this week as there were on the right.
Yeah.
And we were thinking the left side was probably going to be pretty solid, but it wasn't in this game. And so, yeah, it's a little alarming. But let me the positive news is on the numbers I pay attention to, which is net yards per pass attempt, as I've mentioned, we're up to plus 3.46, which makes us 17 points better than average team, which still puts us right there in the Final Four. So if you believe in that number, this team still has a shot.
So one spot in particular that the fans, at least on my Twitter feed and definitely on the message board, I mean, they were taking aim at Mike Onwenu. Meanwhile, Mike Onwenu is named the offensive lineman of the week.
Really?
Yeah, he was named offensive lineman of the week by the program, by Michigan.
And I agree with that.
So, I mean, your assessment.
What, you agree with it?
Assessment of Onwenu's performance and Onwenu compared to Runyon in that game.
So, Harbaugh explicitly stated that Runyon was playing because it's 90 degrees and Onwenu is a house. So, I don't think it's performance related. And Onwenu, when he makes a block, he makes a big block. You know, he's huge, he's agile, and when he gets to a guy, he can blow him out. So, a number of Michigan's excellent runs in this game were created by Onwenu. He had a plus three for me because he blew a guy out so badly that a line slant from Purdue that really should have worked didn't work. And his error rate isn't appreciably higher than anyone else on the line, I don't think. Like, I'd say it's lower than at least Elizio, and with Bredesen kind of coming back to the pack after a great first couple games. Like, I think he's right there with the rest of the line, and he's obviously got a huge upside. And I think you might see Runyon from time to time just because he's a young player and they want to talk to him on the sideline or he's tired, but it's his job.
Yeah, it's a good time for a bye week. I mean, when you talk about some of the issues that you guys are highlighting, and you know Michigan State, they're a pressure team. It's boom or bust for them. And so you know that's how they're going to try to play you.
Yeah, and we should mention on the air the backs did not have a good game with blitz pickup.
No.
And I think, if you're a defensive coordinator looking at playing Michigan, I mean, you're going to do every stunt and blitz that you can find.
We should point out that Higdon had a really good day against Air Force, so it's not like all hope is lost in that department. So, but they had a couple of rough moments here.
All right, so the rough moments kind of extended to the locker room. Michigan overcame those. We'll get to that coming up. Before we do, let's go to the phones at 734-998-1050 and talk to Don in Ann Arbor. Don, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I want to follow up on the offensive line woes. As you guys know, a lot of the blame, finger-pointing, et cetera, is being directed at Tim Drevno for the offensive line problems. Given the fact he's got a solid resume both in the college and at the pros as an offensive line coach, do you think the criticism of him specifically is warranted? Did he forget how to coach offensive line? Or is this a symptom of failures in past offensive line recruiting at Michigan, both in terms of recruiting and retention? What's your opinion? Thanks.
I think it could be a little of both. I mean, obviously, Michigan doesn't have much depth. That they're running out 2 second-year players, which is, I mean, these guys should be redshirt freshmen, but they're sophomores because they had to be. And, of course, you lose Grant Newsom, and that's pretty much the guy that you couldn't lose, period. Like, of all 85 scholarship players on this roster, he's the worst one to lose in that.
More so than Mason Cole?
Well, okay, either tackle, hypothetical starting tackle. Those guys are probably about equal. And, I mean, who's behind him? You know, a guy who was a guard and is a guard again in Runyon, a guy in Elizio who's basically a second-year player because he missed a bunch of time as a sophomore. I mean, he's not got a lot of ammunition here. But part of that is
kind of... And plus fries on the tackles.
Part of that is kind of his own doing, though, because, like, he lost Dever Hamilton. They did not replace him. Like, they waited so long to pull the trigger on Swenson that they didn't realize that they needed a tackle in that class. So, you know, I think some of the personnel issues are self-inflicted, and it's year three, so it's like maybe these guys need to step up a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I think it's hard not to be disappointed with what we've seen on the offensive line, and Drevno, you know, is that guy. But, I mean, we also have to recognize just the variance that you can get with players, right?
And Drev is not the only guy coaching the offensive line now. You got Fry there. I think you have a couple of guys that have track records for being able to develop. Now, you know, we're 4 games in. If we are, you know, you get another third of the way through the season and you see no improvement, then, hey, you know, I think panic, you know, the alarm bells maybe get louder. I'm really interested to see how they come off of this bye because now you have some actual game film to jump into with these guys. And if nothing else, I mean, if things are showing no signs of improvement in certain areas, then it doesn't hurt you to try alternatives at that point. If you aren't seeing any discernible growth at a spot, then the alternative can't be any worse, right?
Yeah, but who's the alternative? Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the tackle position, you're talking about tackle. I mean, that battle for most of camp was between Ulizio and Runyon.
Right. So you're going to remove Runyon back out there?
Yeah,
exactly. See, I don't know. That exact sound
I mean, but again, it couldn't be if it doesn't get better, then it obviously can't be worse to try it.
I think it might. The problem is offensive lines, a lot of synergy is involved. a lot of communication, synergy, people playing together. I mean, when you start rotating people in and out, you're going to start losing that. And so, and it's why I think in general, and Michigan in particular, doesn't do a lot of
shifting. Well, see, they don't, but if you talk to them about it, they don't buy that.
They don't.
Yeah, Drev or Fry, they both say that, you know, we move guys around the offensive line and do it throughout camp, throughout the spring, because we believe that, you know, you rep those guys at those different spots and you get them in there. As long as they are versed in the position, we can throw a guy in there and keep it moving.
Well, it hasn't looked like that in the season because they've been pretty static.
I think you are seeing evidence of guys. This is maybe the place on the team where the youth, the inexperience, or both is showing through the most. Well, this is where it's showing up the most.
But you got two seniors on this line. This isn't that.
Yeah,
young
but
of
you
a
got
line.
But you got a senior that hadn't played. Right. Yeah, I mean, Patrick Kugler had not played significantly on this team. Yeah, and so now this is it.
It's offensive line, right? So you expect to have more than you don't expect to have two redshirt freshmen essentially on an offensive line, right? Mm-hmm. That's what those guys should be. And I understand that there are going to be hiccups. And I understand that they're really in tough at right tackle for a lot of reasons. I still get frustrated because I'm watching them run these inside zone plays, and you get a guy releasing immediately, and he's setting his guy up, his teammate up for failure. And we've seen that basically since I can remember. And I'm just like, these first level rules about who you need to block are pretty clear.
So it's a good time for this bye week.
Yeah, I mean,
you got all this on film, and you got an extra week to really work on it. For and as you prepare for a team that you know what they do, you know how they're going to attack you, and it's going to be linebackers playing downhill, trying to get in your backfield. You got not only you're going to have good game film on them because they can't hold a damn thing back based on who they're playing.
No.
So you're going to see the kitchen sink, and you have on film what your deficiencies are.
Well, they might have put the scoring offense back in the barn after going down 35-10.
just
saying.
I'm just talking about defensively.
Just saying. Defensively.
Well, unfortunately, they did not look as bad as that score line indicated in that game.
Yeah, I actually thought that was a pretty even game between Notre Dame and...
Are you crazy?
No, I thought that was pretty even.
That is the craziest thing I've
ever
heard.
I thought... The line play was pretty equal on both sides of the Notre Dame Michigan State game. I don't think Michigan State is as bad as I thought they were. I mean, that's only one game.
Did you see Cole Chewins get run over by a 240-pound guy? Can you imagine what's going to happen to him against Michigan?
Well,
I thought what happened to Michigan State is going to happen to them when they play an offense that has a quarterback with a pulse. Now, turnovers certainly were a huge part of that game, but, I mean, they turned the football over against Western Michigan, and Western Michigan scored on a kickoff return, a fumble return. Darius Phillips did everything he could to win that game for them, and they didn't have a quarterback that could complete a forward pass. If they did, they would have beaten Michigan State.
I'm not saying that Michigan's not going to beat Michigan State. I'm just saying Michigan State's better than I thought they were.
Dude.
From watching that game.
All right.
I agree with that. One thing
about the line play in that game is that Notre Dame's defensive line was, I think, 105th in havoc plays last year, which means hurries, sacks, tackles for loss. Their linebackers weren't much better. Like, their top guy was like an 8 tackle for loss, 4 sack guy. Devin Bush already has that 4 games into the season. You got Mo Hurst, you got Chase Winovich. Notre Dame was the perfect matchup for Michigan State's iffy offensive line. They look more coherent when they run the ball, but when they drop back to pass, Lewerke is going to be under siege. And you got to remember that one of their scoring drives in this game was based off a 52-yard quarterback scramble.
Yeah.
Not scramble, sneak.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's quarterback sneak.
I mean, I don't think there's anything inconsistent with what the two of us are saying. Like, I agree with everything. I just don't know
how you look at that game like, oh, wow, Michigan State, they're better. I didn't think that at all. I looked at that game and said, they are exactly who I thought they were. Yeah, that's what I saw.
At the same time, like, you've got, like, Bowling Green playing Northwestern and getting hammered 49-7 in a game that was competitive into the third quarter against Michigan State.
I mean, I'm talking about the line play. I mean, I don't think Michigan State has a great quarterback or a great secondary, and that obviously is going to play a huge
I actually like Lewerke more than anything else.
I don't think he's very good.
He's scattershot, but he's pretty mobile. If you give him a clean pocket.
I think Lewerke's okay, and I like their running backs a lot. Those guys play hard and they run hard. And I think we'll beat that team. But I was surprised that really I didn't feel like Notre Dame dominated the line of scrimmage in that game.
They're a meatball team. That's a Craigism. They're a meatball team.
Let's get one phone call in before the break. Talk to Mark in Lansing. Mark, what's up?
Hey, man, can we move some of the fuzziness out of this offensive line description? I don't think it's a four-game thing, go look at the film, fix thing at all. Brian, if I understand you correctly, and I don't know a whole lot about offensive line play, but I do know how to read, and I do know how to see what's going on out there. Brian, I think you've been talking about this offensive line for a couple of years now. And I think what you also said today was that we're seeing the same issues. The first year was we got a new coach in Drevno. The second last year was the personnel wasn't that good. They're overrated. Now I don't even know. It's a mixed bag right now. But I think, Brian, what you said, are you seeing technique and you're seeing physical issues? And that resonates to me. This is not just we're going to look at the film and fix things. And I don't see it that way. If you got a different understanding as to what's going on with this offensive line, I would really appreciate you taking the fuzziness out of the discussion. And then two, there was a lot of sentiment coming off that game against Purdue and O'Korn's performance that Michigan changed the offense for O'Korn. And I'm curious as to whether or not you agree with that, that they did change, or it just looked differently because we had a different quarterback in there, and I'll hang up on this.
So let's frame this correctly, because I think the premise of the first question is a bit wrong. You don't have the same components. You don't have the same dynamic with the components that are out there, in that it's inexperience and youth or both, but you also don't have the same coaches. So you have Drevno coaching interior line, and you have Greg Frey, who's there coaching the tackles and tight end. So I think it is wholly accurate to say four-game sample space to see what Frey is going to do with the tackles. I think that's totally legit.
Well, so I think his point is, like, why is this offensive line bad? Like, what do we think the major reason is? And in year one, we're like, oh, it's Hoke. And year two, it's like, oh, it's these guys aren't very good. They're
limited physically.
Yeah. And year three, you start thinking, well, this still doesn't look very good. And there are reasons for that with personnel issues. But it does kind of start – you kind of start looking at the coaching at that point. And
so,
I'm not –
We're talking mostly about tackles, right?
Well
– and Greg Frey is your tackles coach.
Is that the way it really breaks down?
Like, that is the way it breaks down.
I mean, I can't imagine that, like, they're trying to set up inside zone and Greg Frey is coaching just the tackles and Trim Drevno is coaching – like, I would assume that it's like, all right, well, one guy's the inside zone guy, one guy's the power guy, one guy's the jet sweep guy. Like, that's how I would do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But in terms of the fuzziness, like, I don't know about technique. I've never tried to, because that's just way beyond the scope of anything that I can communicate to mm-hmm. people. What I do see is I see what happens when you try to execute a scheme and they do a slant or a twist and how you react to that. And sometimes you get guys who are like, all right, I'm going to get off this other guy and I need to go get this guy. And that's a mental thing. And they're really struggling at that right now.
Well, you know, I don't think there's any question that from a recruiting perspective, it is something that long term where they are as an offensive line, they are increasing the numbers and the talent at the position in recruiting. I think that is definitely the case. But as far as the technical aspects of some of the guys that are out there that haven't played before. So you have inexperience, and then you have, hey, you know what? A young guy, new coach. Will it get better? We can hope, but I think it's too soon to say that it won't get any better at all. That they are what they're going to be after four games with this new group. If we were talking about Kyle Kalis and Magnuson and those same guys back this year, even with Greg Frey, I might say,
Is that fair? Is it fair to say that your expectations have lowered, though?
My expectations for how good this line can be?
Yes. Come on.
Put it this way. I expect them to be much better than they've shown thus far.
Okay, that's not what I asked.
Did I think they were going to be a dominant line?
Giving you the edge.
Do I still think? No. So from the standpoint of, do I think they can be a better line than last year? I still think that.
Okay.
I still think they can be a better line than last year.
I don't. I think that's well, gone.
I don't either, but I didn't think so before the year.
Well,
I think
they're fine.
Expectations
just
changed.
Fine, Craig.
I think
fine.
They could be a better line than last year.
You know, and I don't know what the answer is. I doubt if it's coaching. I mean, but then I thought Daryl Funk was a good offensive line coach.
Yeah, you got to throw that one in there.
Yeah.
All right, we got to get to a break. Be back on the other side to round things out here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. All right, so guys, you know, around the Big Ten really quickly before we get to the phones, we talked a little bit about Michigan State, Penn State over Iowa. I had Iowa in that game. You know, and you know how much respect I have for Penn State. I got even more respect for Penn State after them pulling that game out in Kinnick Stadium at night against a better Iowa team than I thought they would field this year.
Yeah, I heard you talking about Josie Jewell when I was coming in, and that's going to be really interesting because Michigan has Devin Bush, and if there was one linebacker in the whole world I wanted against Saquon Barkley, it would be Devin Bush.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be Thunderdome right there. And if Michigan can beat up on that offensive line, which I think they can, and they can not, you know, hold Barkley completely shut out, but, you know, hold him down, but then it's just about whether they can do anything on offense. That was the most alarming thing.
Is he better than you thought he was, or is he what you thought he was? And Penn State in general, are they better than you thought they were? Or are they about what you expected?
Defensively, yes. Like, I was alarmed at how comprehensively they shut down an Iowa offense that I thought should be pretty good. I mean, they have Akram Wadley. Nate Stanley looks like a pretty decent quarterback. They have wide receiver issues, but their offensive line is pretty veteran, and Iowa could not do anything the whole game. And that worries me because, like, is Michigan going to look significantly different? I hope so. I couldn't tell you that, though. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, it was a heck of a game. I know Craig Ross does not know what Twitter is, but he was on Twitter that night when I was talking about John O'Neill reffing that game.
Craig Ross is on Twitter?
No. Someone said, hey, you're channeling your inner Craig Ross when I made that.
As long as we're at that, a shout out to Jennifer Anderson in Louisiana. She sent me an email this week. She's in the Army, as is her husband, and they listen to our show on podcast. But they did say they like Ed a lot better than me. Now, I don't know why they sent me an email telling me they like Ed a lot better than me.
I got an email this week that was like, I can't repeat it on the radio, but he was like, why are you so mean to Ed all the time? And I was like,
all right, so
Ed is mean to me. This is a mutual thing.
I'll be the guy that's mean to Ed today. Ed, I have to ask you a question.
Wait, what?
How can anybody take your numbers seriously at the moment if you have Central Florida at number one?
Oh, well, that requires some explanation, man.
Okay, explain.
Well, they beat Maryland. Maryland beat Texas. Texas beat USC. USC beat Stanford, and Stanford's a decent team. So all that is pushing USC.
Maryland beat Texas, but Texas lost to USC.
Texas played USC tight.
They did, but Maryland is not good. They're two quarterbacks down. It's Central Florida should not be number one in the country.
So the numbers don't know that the first stringer played against Texas and the
third stringer played or second and third stringer played.
I mean, look, Central Florida's only played two games. It's a fluke. I've left it up there because models aren't perfect, and we need to appreciate that. And you know, Central Florida will go down next week.
I don't know. We'll talk about if models are perfect or not in the lounge next week. But
oh, I just want to say I met someone at a bar last night that we were talking. I was like, oh, I'm on the ring and go blog round table, and he looked at me like, you're the guy who gives Brian Cook crap all the time.
Well, you'll be back giving Brian Cook crap next week on the Imgo blog round table. That'll do it for today's show.
Better than us!
No!